This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Impossible Box. Hello and welcome to episode 28 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and joining me tonight, someone whose name, if it was shouted loud enough from where he is now, would take 44.5 seconds to reach me. It's my friend Dave. Good evening, Dave. How are you?
2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So it's going to be here for ages, aren't we?
Yeah.
Hi, Yannick. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. The winter is going away slowly. The light is back in the morning. So the spirit is going up.
It's surprising how much of a difference it makes to go to work in the daylight and then come home in the daylight.
Yeah. Yeah, you feel like you have, you know, you're not spending your day at work and doing nothing else. So, yeah, it's a lot better.
Just emerging into the darkness. That's nice and cheery, isn't it?
Absolutely. What did you say? You said the name of a movie that we don't talk about.
No, I didn't. I said the word "the" was in there.
Okay. I'll give you this.
Thank you very much. Don't start this early in the show.
Also joining us tonight is someone who's coming back on the show, and it's our friend Lainey. Good evening, Lainey. How are you?
Good evening. Thank you for having me back. I'm looking forward to this.
It's a pleasure. Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Tonight we are going to review Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 6. The Impossible Box. We will discuss with Lainey about Picard, and we will also mention a theory that one of our previous guests sent us on our Telegram group, and you will know more about Telegram later in the show, and maybe our very own twisted theory that I suggested during the week.
Well, you say twisted, but actually it has legs.
Yeah.
It's not like my theory of the Tal Shiar creating the Borg, which is highly unlikely but immense fun. This actually could be true.
Could be. It could be.
Mm. More about that later, I think.
Yes, more on that later. So, with that being said, let's begin with our review of Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 6, The Impossible Box.
Woohoo!
So, on the prologue, we are on a dark and stormy night, where a young Soji Asha walks down the hall looking for her father. She looks in a lit room to find a laboratory with flowers growing before the man inside calls her name. Then we're back aboard the artifact, where Soji awakens in bed with Narek, telling him she was having the same dream again. When he asks her to tell him about it, she wonders if he's genuinely concerned or if he's just wondering how her mind works. He asks her why it can't be both, wanting to know every little thing about her. She remarks that he thought she was an imposter, to which he backtracks and says she was full of secrets. She remarks the irony of this coming from a Romulan and notes the things he keeps from her, like his name, for instance, showing her knowledge of Romulan culture by remarking on how they only shared their true name with the one they gave their heart to. Narek instead asks about the dream, wondering if it was a random creation of a wren or an actual memory. Narek suggests asking her mother about it, as he knows she talks to her mother every night, much to Soji's surprise. As he leaves, she calls out to him by the name she knows, to which he says, "That's not my name."
Dave's dying at that one.
Yeah, so I thought the young actress was looking kind of like the actress who plays Soji. I don't know if that was CG or if there's a relation between them. I didn't check, but I thought she was, or maybe I was expecting to see, I was expecting her to be Soji. So maybe I just found a resemblance where there is none. But I thought she was looking. They were looking alike, both.
I would imagine that they would have gone through quite a search to find somebody who had at least a vague passing resemblance to. I have to find out what her name is now. To the actress that plays the grown-up Soji.
Yeah. Back aboard La Sirena, Dr. Jurati explains to Jean-Luc Picard that the injuries that Bruce Maddox had sustained on Freecloud were substantial, and that while the medication were enough to keep him stable, his heart just couldn't take it. Yeah, right. Picard can see it's hard for her, to which she confirms it was harder than she could have imagined.
See, I'm still really confused here how there's no record of anything here.
Yeah, that's just unimaginable.
It is, because the EMH essentially saw what she did. There must be some form of surveillance. There must be some system somewhere that logs the fact that the life support was turned off.
Yeah.
Where is all this? Where is all this evidence that points to her being a murderer?
Conveniently ignored.
Yeah.
Maybe she erased it. Because she was on the computer before. So I don't know. Maybe she's...
Yeah.
She can do things. I don't know. I'm just...
No, I think if the theory that we'll be sharing with you a bit later on has any form of credibility, then there is a possibility she may have had that clearance.
Yeah.
But I find it unlikely.
But at any rate, she's a very good liar, because she didn't even flinch for a second when she was just lying to his face.
No.
So something strange. So yeah, maybe my theory is not too far-fetched. Dr. Jurati remembers Maddox had told Picard that Soji was on the artifact. When Elnor asks about it, apologizing for inbutting, as he puts it, Picard explains it was an abandoned Borg cube, and when the young warrior asks about Seven of Nine, Picard is emphatic the Borg were nothing like her at all. Jurati also remembers that Maddox said he had sent Soji and Daj to find out the truth behind the ban on synthetics, wondering why he would send Soji there. Elnor also wonders how they knew she was alive. Picard admits they don't, which is why they have to find out. Elnor is quick to see that Picard is not looking forward to it, and he confirms he is not, as his last visit to a Borg cube was not voluntary.
That's one way of putting it.
Jurati knows that he had been assimilated, becoming Locutus of Borg, as anything to do with the Borgs was required reading in her work. She points out that the Borg in that cube are separated from the collective, and under the control of Romulans, wondering if that changed them. Picard, with a hint of contempt in his voice, snaps that the Borg couldn't change, remarking how they coldly assimilate entire worlds, entire systems. They don't change, he asserts. They metastasize. After Picard abruptly excuses himself, Elnor tells Jurati that Picard can't see she was also haunted by something she would rather forget, and asks if he was inbutting again. That time, yes, Jurati curtly replies, as she, too, leaves.
Well, no, I disagree. I don't think he did it inbut. I think he head-nailed.
Yeah. She was not pleased. No, not at all. Picard was really nervous, really tense when he talked about the Borg. And we could see that it is still, even though those events were many, many, many years ago, he's still very troubled by the experience. I guess it's really traumatic, a really traumatic experience.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. And we'll see later on that he really struggles with events that occurred during that period.
Yeah. In his holodeck study, Picard brings up the computer files on the artifact, any treaty on the subject, and the Borg. As he scrolls through the pages, he sees two images of Hugh, both before and after his de-assimilation, before stopping on an image of himself as Locutus, putting a hand to his face where the implants had once been, still haunted over the events of what happened more than 30 years earlier. Now, just a quick remark. How would a picture of him as Locutus be on file? Oh yeah, he was deborgified on the Enterprise, so maybe they had the opportunity to take a snapshot there.
They just took stills from previous episodes. I do love what they did, though. I think the way they merged the two images through the transparent view screen.
Yes.
I thought that was really, really well done.
Yes. But there's a problem.
What is that?
We see the screen, the transparent screen or holo thing from behind. And
right.
So from behind, we see the implants on the left side. And Picard puts his hand on the right side of his face. But then if you were looking at the picture, it would be reverted. So that means he had the implant on the left side of his face. So either the picture is not on you know, correctly, is flipped, or he forgot where he had the implant.
Yeah, because he will be looking at a non-mirror image of himself, which means that what is on his right-hand side to him will be on the right-hand side, i.e. the left-hand side of Picard.
Yes.
Where we're looking through it,
they
would be the other way around.
Yeah.
If we were looking through it from the other way, then that would have been correct. Good spot.
Yeah. I watched that 3 times to be sure.
Is that hard? Have you watched episodes more than that?
I watched the first episode 4 times, I think. But times. I watched the episode only twice. I just watched this scene 3 times to make sure.
Did you watch it in French any of those times?
I watched the pilot 3 times in English and 1 time in French.
No,
I meant
this scene.
This scene, no.
No, okay.
But since it doesn't say anything, it doesn't matter if I watched it in French or not. Maybe in French the picture is flipped. So, on to Act 1. Late that evening, Rios kicks a soccer ball around the transporter room as Chirati comes out of her quarters. He apologizes for waking her, before noticing she has not been sleeping. Chirati asks him why he likes it in space, which she calls cold and empty and wanting to kill him. He offers her a drink, remarking on how close she has been with Maddox, and offers to talk about it. Instead, she kisses him, remarking she'd never slept with a captain of anything before thinking on this superpower she has, sensing mistakes while she's making them. She admits she feels hollow, hopeless, lonely, and afraid. She kisses him again, and Rios asks if it would help at all. Chirati admits it would help for a few hours as she leads him by the hand to his quarters.
What a tart. Well, Both of them, that is.
That's not the word I was going to say.
No. I do have a problem with that scene overall, in that you could see how frightened and vulnerable she was appearing. And I'm really surprised that Rios didn't pick up on that. And that disturbed me slightly.
Yeah. Well, I didn't notice that either. So, but I thought she was really quick to forget about Maddox and you know, throw herself on in Rios's arms.
Yeah.
I didn't notice anything once I saw Santiago Cabrera without his top on. I'm sorry. That was it. I just, everything else in that scene just kind of went by. I can't work out whether she's doing this by herself or whether she's being coerced into doing it by somebody else. But I don't know. It's kind of strange. And that comment about not sleeping with the captain, right, that was very presumptive. and very manipulative as well.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought she was doing that on purpose. She had maybe a goal. Maybe she wanted to extract information, or I don't know. I don't know what she would want to extract. Rios is pretty open. I mean, he's talking freely to everyone on the ship. Well, as far as we know. So I don't know. Mark said he didn't really understand why that scene was there at all, and I have to admit that I was kind of like that. But there's no real purpose.
It could have been leading into something for later on.
Yeah.
He beat me to it. I was going to say the same thing.
About the artifact, Narek enters his own quarters to find his sister, Narissa, playing with his Tanchkran, telling her to hand it back before she breaks it. He refers to it not as a toy, but as a tool to help him think, and remarks he is making progress with Soji. He explains about her recurring dream, wondering why Maddox programmed her to dream. Narissa mockingly asks if she dreams about growing old with him and making freakish little android babies, and asks if he dreams of her too. To her disgust, she can see he has fallen in love with it, and tells him she is taking over the operation. Narek explains that every piece of synthetic design serves a purpose, so why give her dreams? Narissa believes that it's simply a malfunction, but Narek believes it is intentional. Soji's neural pathways were auto-heuristic, always seeking and forming more efficient connections, which has somehow given her an unconscious mind. When she dreams, she's reconciling the two views of herself, human and synthetic. Bits of truth coming to the surface. If Narek can get Soji to tell him about her dreams, he believes he can reach her memory engrammed without triggering her self-defense programming, as happened with Daj, and that she could lead them to their homeworld. Narissa asks if Narek intends to keep sharing her bed, fidgeting with her like he does his stupid box. Narek chides her for her impatience, saying that the key to opening a Tanchkran was to understand what kept it closed, to move each piece ever so slightly until the box reveals its content.
Very intrigued by that little little box.
Yeah.
Love the idea of it.
Yeah, and I love how it opens when it's unlocked, even though it's unrealistic. It's kind of like the archive box.
Yes, no, exactly so.
Yeah.
But when they said about opening it up and getting a prize, I didn't think that the little figurine that was kind of like concealed inside it was that much of a prize,
no,
to be honest.
But maybe it was used for Romulan kids to, you know, like a Kinder egg?
I suppose, yeah. I have read a series of books by David Eddings about 40,000 times. And there's a mention in one of those about a toy that one of the characters used to give his daughter to play with to keep her out of his way. And apparently it was a stick that only had one end.
Interesting.
And it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
If it's a toy that you can't just open, you have to learn it, feel it, understand its purpose for existence, then you're likely to get more out of it.
Okay.
I want one.
Yeah.
It's that simple. I want one.
I thought for a moment that Narissa would ask if Soji were dreaming of electric sheep. You know, like in the...
I wondered if somebody was going to mention that at some point.
Because of the Philip K. Dick
That's right, yes.
Book.
Do Android Stream for Electric Sheep.
Yeah. Brilliant. But no, they didn't go that far. But it would have been fun.
Yes, it would. I have a question, not so much regarding the scene, but regarding the review. The review itself, and also the article, the Memory Alpha article of Narissa, has Narissa's name in quotes.
Yes.
I mean, we know that Narissa clearly isn't her real name, because that's how Romulans...
Yeah,
you know,
but
that's Romulan culture.
Narek's name is not in...
Precisely. Code. Precisely my point.
So what do they know that we don't?
I don't know.
Yeah, me neither.
So many questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just... I asked myself that question while preparing the review. So maybe they know something and we will have a revelation. Or maybe they just copy and paste the first thing that came to the, you know, to them. I don't know. Meanwhile, La Sirena is about to leave the former Romulan neutral zone and enter Romulan space, which is technically a breach of Galactic Treaty. But Rios sardonically says he has no problem with that, since Picard has a plan to get aboard a Romulan-controlled Borg cube, crawling with Talshia without authorization, or lying. When Jurati suggests using her scientific credentials, Picard tells her it won't work. If the Romulans don't recognize him the moment he steps off the ship, the Borg will. The way to do this, he explains, is the Quat-Milat way, being perfectly open. He explains that the Borg Reclamation Project maintains its independency by treaty, and if he can get Federation diplomatic credentials, the Romulan would be forced to let him meet with the project's director or risk a diplomatic incident. When Rios asks why the Federation would do this for him, Picard replies that they are not. Then comes the probably best scene of the episode for me.
Yes.
A visibly intoxicated Raffi, bottled in her hand, enters the bridge, demanding a bit of space so she can sweet-talk the Federation, which Rios believes to be a bad idea. Inhaling a bit of snake leaf, Raffi contacts her friend Amy, a captain of Starfleet Command, and explains she needs diplomatic credentials for Picard to visit the artifact. Amy comments she wishes she could help, but the artifact was restricted to scientists only, plus the Romulan angle makes it tricky. Raffi understands, but comments on how awkward it would be when they arrived at the artifact in approximately 3 hours. Amy worriedly tells her to turn around, as going into Romulan space without permission is an act of war. Raffi knows this, and also knows that even if the Federation denied it, Picard is so Federation, his face is probably still on the damn brochures, which is why she was giving the warning and asking to do it proper, with an official letter of credence. After a moment, Amy agrees, 24 hours in and out, before telling Raffi never to call her again. Picard and the crew applaud Raffi before Rios helps her to her quarters. She was in a bad shape right before she started talking and right after, but during her talk with her chat with Amy, she was spot on.
Yeah, very focused indeed. You could see how badly damaged she was.
Yeah,
at that point. Clearly, what happened on the planet's surface has hit her really hard. But I don't know. I get the applause. I think she deserved it, but I also think it was incredibly awkward.
Yeah, because she basically did her job. But yeah, what I took from this scene is that at some point, she said she didn't want to end up on the wrong side of a Romulan disruptor, and she still she had hope to drink herself to death. So that means Amy knew she had a problem. So that brings us back to last week when we talked about when she told her son that she was clean. That means she had a problem, and that Starfleet was. Or at least a friend Amy, but I would say Starfleet was actually aware of that. So that's the pieces are falling together. We know that she had an addiction to probably alcohol and maybe some other stuff.
Yeah.
While she was in Starfleet.
But although when she went to the planet to meet up with Gabe in the last episode where she claimed she was clean, I mean, we obviously know for a fact that she wasn't, because she was drinking and smoking that stuff only a couple of episodes before.
Yeah.
But I think she was probably doing it recreationally then.
Yeah.
Whereas now she's doing it as a coping mechanism, an mm-hmm. escape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. May we take a moment to salute Nate in the YouTube chat room. Good evening, Nate.
Yeah. Nate says it's interesting that there are people with substance abuse in the 24th century.
Yeah.
I can't imagine why there necessarily wouldn't be.
Because everybody is happy and it's an ideal world?
I don't think that's why they're happy.
Well, it was ideal in the 24th century, but now it's a bit darker.
Mm. I think with every civilization, you're always going to have the haves and the have-nots. The people who are part of society, they contribute to society, they reap from society. But then you're going to get the, I don't want to say the poorer classes, but that's kind of what I mean, where, you know, they are a lesser people, not through any particular social construct, more because of circumstance. And you might find that those people who are finding themselves, I mean, you don't really have poverty in the 24th century, do you? Because the whole concept of money and the like of it is kind of non-existent. But yeah. I suppose if you're not contributing to society, you're not going to get back from society, because that's how it works.
Yes, probably, yeah.
So there has to be some form of coping mechanism.
Mm. Also, at the end of this scene, we could hear a few notes of the next gen music theme. That was brilliant.
Yes, I did. I picked up on it this time. I mean, you mentioned in the last few episodes that you've heard the Voyager theme,
yeah,
wherever Sevens appeared.
Yeah,
and I've not noticed it because I never really watched Voyager. But I did pick up on the TNG thing.
TNG horns.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Right, Act 2. About the artifact, Soji tells Narek she had the dream again and meant to ask her mother about it, but fell asleep while talking to her. Narek asks if this happens often, to which Soji admits she is not sure. Narek, visibly uneasy, explains all communications from Romulan facilities are monitored and all anomalies are flagged. He explained that each call to her mother lasts exactly 70 seconds, which Soji believes to be impossible.
Now, this blows one of our theories up completely.
Yeah.
Because we had a conversation about this. It was either the last episode or the episode before, when we were talking about Mom AI.
Last week.
And we came up with the concept that the AI, the mom that she was speaking to, both of them were speaking to, were part of them.
Yeah.
But if there is an actual airborne communication involved, which the Romulans were able to monitor, then that can't be the case.
Yes, that's exactly what I wrote in my reviews. So, who is she calling?
Couldn't it still be an AI, but based somewhere else?
Yes, it could be.
Like a call.
Yeah, but we were originally considering the possibility that the Daj AI, Mom AI, and the Soji Mom AI were potentially different entities. They may have had some form of link, but that they were, because they were based inside the android host, if you like, that they were two actual entities. But with this idea that actually the AI is external to Soji, it kind of blows that out of the water a bit.
Right, okay.
So I don't know. I'm thrown by this now.
Maybe she called cloudmob.com.
Free cloudmomai.org.
Nate says that he has a hard time believing that someone that can create an AI like Soji would have a decent random generator for conversation time. Yeah, 70 seconds sharp. You know, maybe they didn't have more credit, you know, or it's an evaluation version.
For every single call?
Yeah.
Unless that's that's the battery charge time. So you charge the batteries up and then they last for 70 seconds and then...
That's the free tier. The free tier. You have 70 seconds. If you want to go longer, you need in the subscription.
Please insert coins after the tone.
Now, on the 70 seconds limit thing, I was thinking maybe there's something within the call, like in the visual of the mother or mom, like a hypnosis type thing that would kind of send her off to sleep. You know, something subliminal.
That's when we suggested a few episodes ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I might have missed that one. Sorry.
the first time Soji called her mom and her mom talked about Dash. When Soji asked if Dash was still alive, and then we suggested that the call itself was putting her to sleep for protection, or
there might have been some kind of trigger phrase that mom said that that caused her to effectively pass out.
Anyway, back on La Sirena, as Rios helps Musica into her quarters, she asks how long he's known her, and he says it has been a while. She explains about her son, Gabriel Wong, who is grown up, married, and expecting a daughter, before lamenting she will never know her grandchild. Rios, showing a more tender side, tucks Musica into bed, remarking that no one gets all of it right, before taking the bottle out of her quarters and returning to the bridge. I wonder when those two actually met, because, well, probably after she left Starfleet. It's been a while since Picard resigned from Starfleet, so I guess she had time to make new friends.
I don't know, but I kind of got the impression from the first time that we met Rios that they had a bit of a history.
Yeah.
Not a personal history, but they had known each other a while. And yet he didn't know that she had a son.
Well, apparently no one knew. That's what I get from this, that she didn't tell anyone. Okay.
I did like, Rios in that scene.
Yeah.
I thought we saw a really, really pleasant soft side to him, the way he was really gentle with Raffi, seemed to be really quite empathetic towards her.
Yeah.
I was thinking to myself, that is so uncharacteristic.
I wonder if it's specifically with Raffi or if he would have been like that with any woman.
Either or.
Yeah. Nate says that Raffi seems like an unlikely first officer to Picard. Yeah, I agree. Just by the fact that she calls him JL, it's uncharacteristic. There's something we suggested, I don't know if it's last week or the week before, that there might be something more than just a captain to first officer relationship between the two.
I'm going to disagree with Nate, actually, because I think that she would have been the perfect complement to Picard as first officer, because if Picard was very much Starfleet, I would suggest that Raffi is very much not Starfleet. She doesn't tend to take herself very seriously. She's impulsive. She doesn't seem to want to conform, which is the exact opposite of Picard. And I think for that reason, they would have worked really well together.
That's the Raffi we see now. We don't really know how she was when she was his first officer.
I'm going primarily from the time we did meet her 14 odd years ago, around about the time that, in fact, at the time that Picard resigned and she lost her job.
Yeah.
That she still had that same edge to her.
Yeah.
To the person that we know now. I don't know.
I will have to reread the comics to try and see if we can get more out of the comics.
They may, as regards a working relationship, it's like kind of gone through something like really serious together, and it kind of made them close. Because I mean, he was fairly close with Riker.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, he couldn't sleep with Riker.
Obviously, but I don't know. I don't think there was anything that personal, looking at it personally.
But there was something.
There's definitely been something that's given them the connection, but I don't think it was intimate, shall we say.
No, not a relationship kind of thing, but possibly some deep and meaningful event, some kind of conflict, or, I don't know, some form of domestic dispute within the USS Verity that caused them to have to work closer together than you would normally expect from Captain First Officer.
Yeah.
I think my problem is when I'm watching these is I don't necessarily tell a story, so please bear with me.
Neither do we. Those are new characters, so we don't know anything about them. But I'm still stuck on the fact that she calls him JL, and that needs very close relationship. And for him to accept her to do that, it must be something something really, really deep.
Yes, I agree.
I don't recall Riker referring to Picard as anything other than captain or admiral.
No, me neither.
Whereas he would very often call Riker Will.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Which you would kind of expect. That level of informality travels downwards, while it doesn't necessarily travel upwards.
Yeah.
Which is, this is where I don't quite understand either, this thing with Raffi calling him JL.
But maybe we will have a big revelation soon.
I would imagine so.
Season 7 of Star Trek Picard.
That'd be the final season, won't it?
We're going to wait that long.
We've waited this long.
Yeah. We've waited 20 years.
I know.
Soji contacts her mother, talking about her dream, and asks if her father is there. Mom says he is in his lab, and asks not to be disturbed. Soji believes something is wrong with her, which Mom believes to be overwork, suggesting she should lie down. Soji feels a sudden wave of exhaustion, and in an attempt to fight it, grabs a tool from her desk and stabs herself in the hand with it. The attempt is ineffective, as her mom once more tells her to lay down. Unable to fight it, Soji slips into unconsciousness. Shortly afterward, the call ends. And it was there was statics and bugs and things like that. I guess
glitches.
Yeah, the mom AI didn't expect this kind of situation, and it was a little bit derailing.
It's quite interesting that the android in Soji was able to override effectively a direct command to deactivate.
Yeah.
By doing something incredibly human. And by the way, when she stabbed herself in the hand, she didn't.
No. But she didn't notice.
Mm.
But she tried to defeat it, but she didn't manage to do it. She finally fell asleep.
What I want to know is whether the fact that Soji tried to delay the command to deactivate, or whatever it is you want to call it, whether that pushed the call above the 70-second threshold.
I was going to ask if you had timed it, but because I haven't. So someone in the chat room did time the call, then...
There's a project for you for next episode.
Yeah.
Never even occurred to me to time it. That's your thing.
Yeah. I just thought of it. La Sirena approaches the artifact as Rios reads the letter certifying Picard as a Federation Special Envoy to the Borg Reclamation Project, limited only to meeting with the director and only for Picard himself. As he sees the cube, Picard experiences flashback to his assimilation. Rios notes that they are not cleared to land, and that Picard is restricted to specific Bimim coordinates. Elnor is adamant that he should go with Picard, that his pledge overrules diplomatic credentials. While not looking forward to the trip at all, Picard insists that either he goes alone or not at all. He tells Rios he will keep communications open and makes clear to Elnor that he is to stay aboard the ship no matter what. He holds Dadge's pendant in his hands as he looks back up to the artifact.
I love the fact that Elnor kept absolute candor in effect by his use of the phrase, "I already hate this place."
Yeah.
I think that might be my quote of the week.
Yeah, it's a good choice for the quote of the week, yeah.
Mm.
He's an interesting character, Elnor.
Yeah.
Because he's been acted growing up. He's still extremely childlike.
Yeah, he's... As I said, was it last week or the week before? I don't remember. Yeah, he almost sound a little... how can I put that gently? I was going to say a little bit stupid, but it's not that. It's just, as you said, he was isolated and then there's absolute candor, so he just says what he thinks. And it makes for a bit of comedy, of a lighter mood in those moments.
Yeah, and he's done a good job of that so far.
I'm going to start using in-butt and out-butt rather than butt in, butt out. I thought that was hilarious.
I love that. Out-butt is such a brilliant phrase.
Should I out-butt?
Jurati said that she was relieved to stay on the ship, and I just couldn't decide if it was because she didn't want to be on the cube because of what she knows, or maybe she had something to do if she was to go on the cube, or you know, or if she genuinely just wanted to stay on the ship. I have. Now that we know she hides something, I have trouble reading her, which is probably a good thing.
I wonder whether there is a risk that Soji would recognize her.
Ah.
Another level of activation, perhaps, that she doesn't remember her at the moment, but seeing her would potentially trigger something else in her.
I didn't think of that, but... that's a very good reason.
Mm.
But wasn't she offering to use her scientist knowledge, like whatnot, to get on earlier on?
She was offering to use...
And now she wants to...
She was offering to use her credentials, but she didn't say she wanted to go.
Yeah, but then she would have had to have gone, surely.
Yeah, Emmy said that the artifact was restricted to scientists only, which means that if she was going to use her scientist credentials, then she would have had to go on the cube as well.
Okay.
But now she believed she doesn't have to.
Yeah. There's something fishy. Would that fit with my theory?
What? Soji potentially knowing Jurati?
I don't know. We'll talk about that later.
Yes.
Mark has said in the chat room that the phone call was only 6 seconds.
Ah.
Oh, so, what a star. It.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
Right. Nate has just said something, which we will pick up in...
later.
later on in the discussion.
Yeah.
So hold that thought.
So Gia weakens and suddenly begins rummaging through her personal belongings. Pictures, diaries, drawings, even the pendant she wears around her neck. Her scanner indicates that the probable age of all those items is only 37 months. Dun, dun, dun. She hurls her scanner against the wall in frustration.
Yeah, I would too.
She could have thrown it harder because I expected it to smash.
Yeah. Well, it's consistent with what Jurati told Picard in the second episode, I don't remember. When she traced Dash's past to 3 years prior.
Yeah.
And then thinking about that, if she knew Dash, she wouldn't have... she could have pretended to do the research for Picard. Oh, I hate her. Because now we don't know when she lied and when she didn't lie. And if she's still lying or not... And if she will lie or not again, I hate her.
Complex character, very.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's just so much blowing up in all directions at the moment. My prediction that we're going to get to a certain point in the storyline and then everything's just going to take a complete U-turn is becoming more and more likely. Whether it happens... episode 8 or literally in the last seconds of episode 10, don't know. But what's making this series really intriguing for me at the moment is that it is asking more and more questions and it's not answering them.
Not all of them.
No, definitely not all of them. It's not answering many of them. But there's going to become a critical mass where you can't take any more of these in. So they've got to be really careful that they don't end up confounding the viewers into thinking, this is just too complex.
What I think is going to happen is that we're going to realize that all those questions are actually linked And then we're going to have just one huge revelation that will answer everything.
Which is that the Tal Shiar created the Borg.
No.
Thank you.
No, not that. And that's going to be 3 seconds before the end of episode 10.
Do you know what? If this is right, if this theory is right...
We won't hear the end of it.
I can't complete the sentence. It's going to be so, so awesome.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I know it won't be.
Picard beams aboard the artifact, finding himself alone and overwhelmed by his memories of the collective. As he suddenly begins to feel dizzy, he is grabbed by two Borgs. He thrashes against them, demanding them to release him, before a voice explains they don't want him to fall. Picard looks up to see Hugh, who says he did not believe until now that Picard was there, and welcomes him to the Borg Reclamation Project. While he doesn't know why Picard was there, Hugh offers any help he can. Picard is relieved to see a friendly face. The Romulan gave Picard the coordinates to beam, and there's no one there to greet him. I mean, is the Federation, not ambassador, but...
Envoy.
Envoy. Is the Federation envoy, and is coming on board a Romulan... controlled facility. So I would have expected some kind of diplomatic greetings. But instead of that, they gave him coordinates in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. And there was no one there to greet him, like you said. I mean, when they made their initial call, they were 3 hours out.
Yeah.
That's plenty of time for somebody to get off their backside and walk towards the area where he's going to get beamed into.
But don't forget that woman that Rat said that the Romulans were in a 250-year storm. So would they rush to get somebody to meet him?
Yeah, I guess.
They would have done it through the director of the project, which was Hugh.
They did, but obviously they didn't take good care to telling you in advance because you arrived late.
Maybe. Unless they didn't say who it was. So they were like, just some Federation toady.
Yeah. So, on to Act 3 now. Hugh understands Picard's reluctance coming back to a Borg cube, the last place any former Borg ever wanted to see. When Picard asks how he can stand it, Hugh explains that the project needed a director. And as a Federation citizen, he could leave at any time. Unlike the other XBs, as they call themselves, on the cube. He remarks that a new name could be the first step to a new identity, having learned that lesson aboard the Enterprise long ago. Hugh remarks that this place is the artifact, not a Borg cube, and that Picard is not Locutus anymore. Picard explains he is looking for Soji. Hugh has a hunch that she is in danger, given that Picard had come all that way to find her, and that there was a dashing young Romulan spy who had arrived 2 weeks before, pretending not to ask questions about her. Picard asks Hugh to take him to her. Yeah, that young Romulan spy is our good friend Narek. But it seems it was... I guess the time is not linear, so it's not 1 week for each episode, so... Yeah, maybe it was 2 weeks 2 weeks before.
So if we're saying that only 2 weeks has passed since we first met Narek, which would have... Was that episode 2?
Episode 1.
That was episode 1.
End of the episode 1.
So only 2 weeks has passed. That's...
That's strange.
Okay.
Yeah, when he made his entrance like a WWF superstar with the smoke and things.
Can I just say, this scene in particular, but this whole episode, just proves how amazing Patrick Stewart really is.
Yeah.
The fear and him being, you can see how tense he is, even thinking about being near the Borg.
Yeah.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, and when he held Soji's pendant, his hand was trembling. Now, that brings me back to episode zero, when we talked about this this scene where he pours a whiskey, and he was trembling too. So,
at the
time
we
said, in the trailer.
Yeah.
At the time we said it was probably acting on his part, but is it? I don't know. I don't recall seeing him, you know, like that during interviews and things like that. So that's what makes me think that he was actually acting like that. But anyway, we're gonna have to watch more interviews if you want to make sure.
I was quite surprised that, and I can't remember whether it was Hugh that said this or whether it was just a review that mentioned it, that they call themselves XBs.
Hugh said it.
Right. So I didn't pick up on the fact that they actually referred to themselves as XBs. I thought it was a colloquial name given to the XBs, given to the former Borg by members of the Reclamation Project. I didn't realize that was actually a designation.
I think it's the first time we hear one Borg calling themselves XB.
Yeah.
Nate said that he was trembling in chain of command when he was asked, how many lights do you see? So that's a Next Gen episode, right? I guess I don't remember that. Yeah, but he's such a great actor that he could really be actually playing that very, very well.
He is still old, though. Bless him.
Yeah. Yeah, the voice is giving that away.
Yeah, definitely.
In her quarters, Soji explains to Narek that none of her possessions are more than 3 years old, and that she was not able to explain it. Narek suggests the possibility of false memories being implanted, someone looking for something on the cube and concealing it from her. Soji confesses that she is scared, and Narek comforts her, suggesting there is a way to help, a Romulan meditation method called Zalmak. Soji knows it is taboo for non-Romulans, but Narek believes it is the best way to uncover what she was going on. I think he said that it was all the better reason or something like that to actually do that because it was forbidden.
Yeah, yeah. I'm unsure about his motives.
Well, actually, I'm
very sure about his motives,
yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah, we know. But at this point, we didn't know.
No.
Hugh guides Picard through the artifact, showing him where the XBs are brought to recover after the reclamation process. Picard marvels at the idea of undoing assimilation on such a scale, and the fact that it was being done by Romulans. He watches as a former drone, missing an eye, undergoes facial reconstruction. The XB is brought to tears, seeing his nearly restored face in a mirror. Hugh admits that the outcomes are far from ideal, but Picard believes he is doing good, showing what the Borg are underneath. Victims, not monsters. Nonetheless, Yu explains, XBs remain the most despised people in the galaxy, just as enslaved as before, except this time, their queen is a Romulan. Picard sincerely thanks Hugh for showing him around. Hugh knows that no one understands the work better than Picard is, and that he would make an ideal advocate for free Borg. Consulting his computer records, Hugh sees that Soji has called in, and takes Picard in to try and find her.
I think this is a very important scene for Picard to understand. I suppose to offer him a bit of closure to the nightmares that he's been feeling, or the bad memories that he's been recalling since he's known that he's going to be coming onto this cube. This is a good way of letting him realize that actually there is some good that can come out of Borg.
And yeah, maybe that he shouldn't, fear them as much as he does, and that
fear hope. The Borg, but don't fear the Borg, them.
Yeah. Though I don't know what would happen if the cube was reconnected to the collective. So most of them are now, not most of them. A lot of them are now de-assimilated, so they would probably not be joining the collective, but from what we've learned on episode 2, I guess, there are still some bogs in there that are not reclaimed. Back on La Sirena, Rios wakes Ruffy and offers a cup of coffee. I think he said he made coffee when he was just replicated. Well,
no, we saw him pull the cup out of the replicator.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I made you a coffee.
Yeah,
okay.
He also remarks that Picard has checked in, revealing Soji is alive, and that Ruffy owes him 2 strips of latinum, because she had bet they would find her dead. Ruffy wonders why the Talshir kept her alive, given that they know what she would look like after having killed Daj and gone after Maddox on Free Cloud. She suspects that they need something from her, and that gets her to thinking, what would the Talshir need from a synth? And yes, that's a very good question.
It's the question.
Yeah.
This is, I think, the question of the season so far. Why are the Tal Shiar searching for a synth? Because we know because of Daj, they never intended to wipe her out.
No, but we know what Narek wants. He wants to know where the others are.
Yes, because they've mentioned this.
So what they want, we know what they want, but we don't know why they want to kill those synth.
But also, what others?
Yeah, what others?
I know.
Yeah.
I know. There's been a mention of a nest, but who are these others? We've seen no evidence yet that there are any other synths, active synths. Well, other now than Soji.
Yeah, and even Maddox didn't give us any clue.
Nope. He only ever mentioned the two of them.
Yeah, but because apparently the Talshir thinks the others are on the homeworld. So that would mean somehow they know that there's only 2 out there. So with Maddox having seen the Talshir coming after him, he deducted that Daj was dead. And Picard never asked about anyone else than Soji. So, I mean, the guy was dying, so we can forgive him for not mentioning that there was another pack of androids somewhere.
Yeah, but clearly Daj and Soji were the only 2 that were deployed,
yes,
for want of a better phrase.
Yes.
Now, how can they be completely sure that she has that information? Because at the moment, it just seems like everything in her head is the Romulans and the Borgs.
Yes. But we also know that she's making nightly 70-second phone calls to somewhere.
But as far as she's concerned, that's her mother.
Yes. But as far as Narek's concerned, that could be something to do with the homeworld that they believe exists.
Yeah. Oh, no, I get that, but
that she's phoning home to the others.
Do you think maybe those phone calls could be, you know, Soji uploading any information she might have found during the day and uploading
entirely
that?
Entirely possible.
Or maybe at the same time downloading new instructions, you know, updating her objectives and things like that. So kind of a sync.
Yeah.
I like that.
Entirely possible. I think that's a very valid possibility.
Yeah.
Mark's just corrected me. They're not 77-second phone calls. They're 56-second phone calls. I do apologize.
56 that we've seen on screen doesn't mean it wasn't 70 seconds. What we know is that it was not over 70 seconds. It was under 70 seconds. We don't know what happened after the scene switched. We don't have definitive proof that it's only 56 seconds. Well... Those geekery apart. So Narek leads Soji through the artifact, twisting the Tanchkran in his hands as they approach a meditation chamber. Narek asks the sub-commander if the room is free. The sub-commander replies in Romulan that Zalmak is not for round ears, to which Narek replies in the same tongue that the sub-commander's wrong bars were not for idiots and that he risked losing them.
Who the hell is Narek to speak like that to a ranking officer?
Who didn't even respond. He just obeyed. So
yeah, exactly.
He knows him. That the officer knows Narek.
Yeah, but knows him as what?
Yeah.
Who is Narek to them? He's not just a spy. There's a hell of a lot more to this.
Yeah. As they enter, Narek tells Soji to remove her boots, explaining that he evaded her question on whether he cared for her or not because it was too dangerous outside to show her. In there, he feels safe enough to be vulnerable and reveals his true name to be Ryan or something like that. I think it's Ryan. Was there like somewhere?
Something like that.
He tells her to begin at the Yutmak. Soji is confused as she thought that meant closing rather than opening. Narek explains that the journey along the path of the Zalmak begins with the closing of the eyes, a journey into the center of the mind's most intimate space, where deepest truth were hidden, her dreams.
If I might be permitted.
Yes.
It's a trap.
Yeah. No, really?
Never a guest.
For reasons which will come out in the next scene, I am uncertain as to why he gave his true name. Because we still don't know whether he has genuine feelings for her, whether indeed Ryan is his name, is his real name.
Yeah.
But there's something that occurs in the next scene that suggests to me that he is just lying through his teeth.
Oh. I was going in the completely other direction. I was going to say that he's completely truthful.
No, I don't believe that's true.
I agree with Yannick.
That's 2 weeks in a row. This is wrong.
Yes.
Sorry. No, I agree with Yannick. I think he is being truthful because he is expecting a different outcome.
Yes. And given what we see later on, I think it's really his real name.
So you think he's giving stuff away in order to achieve the outcome he's looking for?
He's trying to earn her trust.
He's expecting an
alternate outcome.
But he could do that by giving any name that could potentially be his real name.
Yeah, but I think this one is the real one.
Okay.
He thought that the outcome would be different, and then he saw no reason why not to lie.
Okay.
Well, we'll see. We are on Act 4. So she explains the dream begins the same way. She hears the rain against the window, calling out for her father. When Narek asks why, she says she was scared, perhaps of the thunder. As she walks the path, Narissa watches through a security camera as Narek continues to ask questions. How did Soji feel when he didn't respond? She says she felt lonely, abandoned. She reaches the Lucia, lifting of the eyes. And Narek asks what she sees out of the window. She is unsure, as she never looked that way before. He encourages her to ground herself in details and tells her that the key to the Zalmat is that she was in control of her mind. She says she sees darkness outside, perhaps trees. She turns to the Glamwat, the unfolding. She enters her father's workshop, seeing him inside, but not what he's working on. She can never see past the orchids, and when she enters, her father calls her name, and she awakens. Through that door, Narek explains, is the truth. He tells her that the goal is Vriglam, the center. Her unconscious holds the key to the truth, and he encourages her to take the steps. That I always have a problem with this kind of thing, that she never dreamed of looking through the window, and now she's going to go and look at the window. It's, I don't know, it's a bit far-fetched.
She can only articulate things that she's either seen before or that have been implanted into her mind. So if she has never looked out of the window, which is very, very relevant later on, Or she's never looked beyond the orchids, or she's never gone round to see what her father's working on, then how can she derive that by effectively going round a corner and looking at something that she's never seen before?
Yep, that's exactly my point. For the record, Mark agrees with me too. So that's three. That's 3 persons in 2 weeks.
No. This counts as one. One episode.
Now, girls.
I'm not counting the number of instances. No, you're not having that. So, anyway, this is why I think that Narek is lying. Because he knows that Nerissa is there. Is he likely to reveal his true name to someone else out of genuine emotion, out of genuine feeling, when she's watching, knowing ultimately what their gain is, what it is they're trying to achieve from this particular process, from the Zalmach?
But we don't know when Nerissa started watching. Was she watching at that point?
I would say yes.
I would imagine so, yes.
But given that she already told him that she kind of knew he was in love with her and everything, I say he didn't mind her watching on the security camera.
All I'll say is it's one heck of a gamble.
Yeah.
Because he's revealing a part of it. He's essentially making himself vulnerable.
Yeah.
By revealing his true name to somebody.
Yes.
Now, appreciate later on, I can see why he's made that gamble, because of a potential outcome. But still, I know where this is going. Even before I know where this, you know, what happens later in this scene, I know where this is going. I know what he's trying to do. He's effectively trying to pull information out of her through some form of Romulan hypnosis,
mm-hmm.
going deep into somebody's memory, or in her case, positronic core, and pull out information that effectively confirms who she is. But I still think he's sacrificing a lot of himself in order to achieve that.
I think it's right. He's sacrificing a lot.
I think the phrase you're looking for there, Yannick, is yes, Dave. I agree with you.
No.
Yeah,
he just can't bring himself to say it.
Yes, Dev, I agree with you.
Oh my God.
That is staying in the episode.
I know.
Oh, dear.
Meanwhile, Hugh and Picard enter Soji's quarters, finding photos and other items scattered around the room. Picard realizes she is about to discover who she really is and asks Hugh to find her. Hugh is puzzled when all indications are that she is no longer aboard the cube, which should be impossible, unless, Picard points out, someone has concealed her. Now, that's something I don't understand. Hugh asks, when Picard said she's about to discover who she is, Hugh asks who she is, who she really is. And instead of just, you know, answering that, I suspect she's an android or something like that, Picard just says, oh, we don't have time. But, I mean, it wouldn't take very long to just say a phrase or two.
No, that's deflection. I think he's trying to protect Soji in absolutely any way he possibly can. Even to a Romulan, even to somebody that Picard knows, that would still be a pretty damning piece of information.
I think in a way he's trying to save Hugh as well, because the less Hugh knows, the safer he could be.
Yeah, okay. I can understand that, yeah. But I found it a bit strange, but it makes for good TV.
Yeah.
Soji continues walking the path, seeing she can see the orchids lit by a skylight. Narek tells her that her father will shout at her, but tells her to keep moving, no matter what. Her father turns, but she can never see his face. Behind the orchids, she can see who she believes to be herself, in pieces, like a doll. Through the skylight, she can see two red moons, dark as blood and surrounded by lightning. In the security room, Nerissa congratulates her brother for finding out the truth and sets out to find a planet with two red moons and constant electrical storms. So G is confused as to why she was on a workbench, to which Narek tells her she is not real and never was. While she desperately calls his name, an anguished Narek exits the room and leaves her locked inside with his Tanshkran, which opens to release a radioactive cloud. So G suddenly begins smashing through the floor. As Narek and the subcommander watch, she tears a hole open and jumps through it.
Activated.
Yeah.
Yes, I don't think that's what he planned.
That's exactly what they were looking for. Some kind of indication of where she's dreaming. And the fact that she looked up through a skylight and described that there were two red moons and electrical storms, that's pretty much all the information they need to find out where their homeworld is. So, yeah, achievement unlocked.
And that I can buy, because if she was indeed lying on a workbench, she would have her head up to the ceiling and she would have seen this this opening and the moons and the storm.
Oh, yeah, but hold on a second. We're assuming it was her.
Yeah, we do.
She
maybe
thought it was her. It may not have been. It might have been Darge. It could have been any other android.
Yeah. And she looks a lot like a wooden android. So maybe she was Pinocchio or something.
I was going to say prototype, but yeah, Pinocchio works.
Soon, from the Other Side Podcast Network, a review of Pinocchio. So G suddenly reappears on Yu's computer monitor, showing her between two levels of the cube and moving very fast. Picard realizes she has been activated and tells Yu to take him to her immediately. Narek is also in pursuit, identifying Soji's employee number and saying she is hostile and extremely dangerous. As Picard and Yu search for her, an XB identifies him as Locutus, just as Soji crashes through the ceiling. Picard identifies himself to her as a friend of her father and shows her Daj's necklace, saying he knows what is happening to her. Yu warns that a large number of Romulans are approaching and shows them a way out. She trusted Picard very fast, although, you know, she would be in panic mode probably. So, did her programming kick in and she realized she could trust him, or I'm not sure what happened exactly. Why did she choose to follow him?
There was quite a an elongated hesitation.
Yeah, that's true.
Like she was working it through in her mind as to whether she could trust him. Because I think whereas Darge already inherently knew of Picard, didn't know him, but knew of him, Soji may not have been implanted with that information.
Yeah.
Because Maddox did say that the two androids, he sent one to Earth, where knowledge of Picard would be quite important, and one to the cube, where knowledge of Picard was probably irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
So she's now trying to work out whether she can trust him, whether she was a friend of her father, particularly in the fact that she's just found out that everything she knows is a lie.
Yeah. And Picard had Daj's necklace, so that might have helped too.
That would have helped, yes.
Yeah.
And desperation, of course. They need to get out of there pretty quickly.
Yes.
And didn't she trusted Hugh as well, didn't she? So the fact that Picard was with Hugh may have helped, because she asked Hugh to get her a meeting with
Ramda.
That's her. Sorry, it was a few episodes ago, I forgot. I think there was lots of little things that helped, but she definitely wasn't jumping meat straight away.
Mm.
She did in the hole, she punched, but
plus it was either a case of go with them or get killed by Romulans.
Yeah, that's true.
That's not really a decision, is it? That's a
get killed now or maybe get killed later.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Nate said that it was awesome to watch her smashing through the floor. And I agree. Although I didn't realize she had reached the other... well, she had made a complete hole. I mean, when she stood up and jumped into that hole, I was thinking she just, you know, grabbed a few centimeters. But no, apparently she went through the ceiling of the room below.
Yeah. But if she had been activated, then she wouldn't have needed much room around her to jump through, yeah, because mm-hmm. that jump would have been pretty accurate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of proves that she believed in who she was.
At that moment?
At that moment, yes.
Yeah. So she was activated to escape, and then she was deactivated after that? Because she didn't look... Yeah, no, maybe she was, because she could hear the Romulans. Yeah, there are clues that she was still activated.
Yes. Although we saw the same with Darge when the Tal Shiar agents attacked her apartment. She was activated, and then almost straight afterwards, she almost became herself.
Yes, but with some residue of
enhancements,
of activation.
Yes.
Enhancements, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Nate just said, yeah, once activated, you can't really put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah.
Quite right.
Yeah. And he also said he wants to see more Soji butt kicking.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I hope so.
We need more kick ass on the show.
But no Matrix jump, please.
No. Yeah, bullet time does not bullet. Look, there's a Matrix 4 coming out. Keep bullet time for that.
Really?
Yep. Yes.
No.
There is. Nope. Yeah, there absolutely is. And with most of the original the original cast are going to be in it.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Not looking forward to it.
No. Put that with the new Star Trek films in a box of films to never watch.
And Matrix 2 and 3. Just saying.
Yeah, of course. About La Sirena, Ruffy reports that they are in trouble and that Picard is not responding to comms. As Hugh guides them through the cube, Picard recognizes the room as the Queen Cell, even though he had never been inside before. Both he and Hugh know of it anyway from their time in the collective. Hugh reveals a special trajector, a device the Borg obtained from the Sicarians, for use by the Borg Queen in the event of an emergency. And they are in pretty emergency situation right now.
Yeah, I'd say that.
It has a range of 40,000 light years. Picard contacts Ruffy and tells her to set a course to meet them at Nepenthe. As he turns around, Rios realizes Elnor is gone.
Oops.
Now, how can Soji know about the Borg special trajector?
Did she know about it?
Yes, she said that she was the one saying about telling them about the range of 40,000 light years.
That's not impossible. We already know that she's done a lot of research on a lot of things. She knew a lot about Romulan society, a lot about their ways and means. I think it's perfectly reasonable she might have done some research on the Sicarians.
Yeah, okay.
I'd say done research on, had inserted into her brain.
Yeah. Because if the Romulan knew that the cube had a device capable of traveling 40,000 light years, surely they would have posted at least one red shirt in front of the door. I mean, the equivalent of red shirt. But apparently, the Romulans don't know about this this room and this device.
No, only Hugh knew about it, apparently.
And Soji. But she knew about the device, so I would think she knew about the cube.
Picard knew about the room.
Yeah, but it was a Borg.
The Collective known about the room.
They knew the room. So Picard knew the room would have existed, but I think Hugh was the only one who knew where it was.
Yes, and Picard couldn't know about the device because it has been acquired after Picard time.
Yes.
But now that we think about that, could Soji be an android made with Borg parts and be a part of the collective, but not active as a Borg?
It is feasible. There was another theory that I heard somewhere, and I can't remember who said it, and I don't know whether this is the right time to mention it, that Soji could have been the Borg Queen.
That's Martin who said that on the show last week.
Oh, right. Was it? Okay.
Did you listen to the show, Dave?
I did. I listened to it thoroughly. But
and I have to say that for a moment, I thought that his prediction was going to realize when they entered the Queen cell and then Soji was there and she knew about the device. I was like, oh, maybe Martin was right.
Mm.
And maybe he is. We don't know yet, but... It was almost true for a moment there,
but it would fall in line with the idea of the destroyer.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can add that to the list of theories we're going to talk about after the.
We should keep a list of these.
Elnor beams aboard the artifact. Now that's what the review says, but we don't have any visual confirmation of that. We just know that he suddenly is there.
He just kind of comes out of a corridor.
Yeah, he just came out of the...
He must have been beamed there. Yeah. He must have been. But if he was beamed there, how did nobody on the La Serena not know that he'd use the transporter? How did he know how to use the transporter?
Especially since we said last week that you needed to be qualified to operate the transporter.
Right.
You always needed someone at the console. So it comes back to what I was saying, that sometimes you need someone very qualified to transport someone else, and sometimes you just push a button and run to the pad and hope the beam takes you before, you know, before you're completely materialized.
Quick question: where was Dr. Girardi during the scene on the ship? Was she on the bridge? Or was she missing?
At the end of this scene, she was on the bridge because when...
Right.
Because she knows how to use the transport.
When Rios turns and asks where Elnor is, she's there on the bridge.
All right.
It doesn't mean that she didn't do anything wrong, you know. We know now that she can lie to everybody's face without even...
Oh, she's corrupt as they come.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but at that point, the fact that Elnor's already gone, she could have gone... sent him off and got back again.
Yeah, and said, oh, I don't know. Oh, gosh, he's gone. Oh, my God.
Oh, we know she's good. We know she's a big, fat, good liar.
Yeah.
And we know they don't have any form of auditing or logging on their system.
No.
So that anybody could do anything and nobody would know about it.
Yeah. They only have like 47 holograms who can run the ship, but no, there's no log. Nothing.
Which anybody of even civilian rank could disable.
Yeah.
Although we are assuming that Girardi is civilian. I'm not convinced.
No. Elnor beams aboard the artifact, quickly dispatching three Romulans holding Picard, Hugh, and Soji at gunpoint. Soji can hear more guards coming. Hugh confirms this and reports the device is nearly at full power. He tells them to go, and he would keep the Romulans from... tracing them. Picard tells Elnor the trajectory will take them to a safer place, but Elnor elects to remain behind to cover their escape. Picard protests, saying he would not leave Elnor behind again. While Elnor admits he is glad to hear Picard say that, he knows the Romulan will destroy Soji if he can't get her away. After a moment, Picard and Soji step through the trajectory. Hugh needs only a few minutes to shut the device down and seal the room, and asks if Elnor can hold the Romulans back that long. Elnor replies that he doesn't need that much time, and tells Hugh to stay behind him. Please, my friends, choose to leave, Elnor says, as the door to the Queen cell shuts.
And I love the fact that he said that at the point the door closed, so we didn't actually see it happen. It was just like the final parting shot.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yes. Yes, true. That was a nice touch because the door closed and then you hear him, "Please, my friend, choose to leave." And
yeah,
well, we know what happens. We hope we know what's going to happen, but we'll see next week.
Indeed.
Well, next week in 48 hours, or give or take an hour. It's a good episode. We had answers. We had some questions, but I would say it was maybe just a tad bit under previous ones.
I don't know. I liked certain parts of it. I thought they did the Picard going to the cube bit was absolutely phenomenal. It was definitely a standout of the episode. I think the Romulan hypnosis thing, the Zalmak, was really good, but I think they probably overplayed it slightly. And yeah, that last scene I think was brilliant as well. Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Yannick. That's four times that it was probably not as high a quality as or the higher story quality as the previous ones.
But still good, but
yeah, absolutely, it was still really really good.
Jurati Rios story. I don't understand why it was there. Maybe it was just to have a scene with Rios, playing football without his top. I don't know.
I have a theory.
That's fine by me every week.
Back in your box. I have a theory, and it's not an out there one, so you might be right with this one. I think this is pure deflection. I think that Jurati, I was about to say getting into bed with Rios, quite literally and figuratively speaking, is a way of, what am I trying to say, corrupting his opinion of her. Because at the moment, she doesn't know who she is. He probably doesn't know whether he can trust her or not. She's done some bad things. So this act of intimacy is likely to bring him on the defense of her in anything that occurs where she's being accused of something bad, of malpractice, of murder, or anything like that. He will then jump to her defense.
Yeah.
So I think this is another way, and she's done it before, of effectively protecting her own self-interest through the other people.
Yeah, I get that. I have a feeling that Rios would defend any female that came close to him, but yeah.
I think Lainey would agree with you as well. Yes.
Yeah, I think she was trying to...
I certainly wouldn't say no.
She was trying to protect herself, yeah. But, well, unless it becomes clearer in future episode, I don't really see the point on this.
There has to be one.
Yeah. Probably.
I mean, we've got four episodes left. So we've got to start getting some answers soon, I think. They can't leave it till the... I mean, they can, but I don't want them to leave all the answers to the very last episode. And I certainly don't want them to leave any answers till the second season.
Now, I have a question. Why would Picard choose Nepenthe as the destination? We never heard of that. So, does he have a specific reason? I hope we're gonna understand that next week. This week's episode. I don't know. It seems strange that suddenly he would choose this destination, but probably there's a good reason for that.
No, I don't know. I did look into this because it was a planet I hadn't heard of before, and it seems as though Nepenthe has been created for Picard.
Yeah,
there is a planetary system called the Nepenthe system, which was introduced as part of the Bridge Commander video game. So that could be linked in some way. I don't know. but apparently Nepenthe is sort of dropping off the Star Trek thing for a minute. In Greek mythology, it was a drug that granted forgetfulness. So maybe that's relevant in some way. I don't know. But no, there doesn't seem to be any particular logic at this stage as to why Nepenthe.
Probably he knows something we don't.
We will find out this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're now, I guess, the team is back together. I mean, they're picked up Soji. So now, I guess she's going to tell them what she told Narek, and they will realize that maybe there's a threat. So I would, as a wild guess, I would say they will end up on Soji's homeworld. But yeah, we'll see.
I have just found out why they went to Nepenthe.
Really?
Yes.
So why?
And we will find out in the next episode.
Oh, you've read the preview?
I've read the synopsis.
I knew why.
I've read the synopsis for the next episode. Okay. And I've also read the...
I watched the previews at the end of the last episode.
There's previews at the end of the episode?
Not on Amazon.
There is in the one I watch.
There's on CBS, probably.
Yes. There is... We can probably get away with saying this on this episode because the next episode will be out. The next episode of Picard will be out by the time this gets published. But in the guest list, in the cast list for the next episode, the answer is given.
Okay. I think I know.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll see that next week. And if...
Excuse me, can I come back next week?
Sure. Come back in the YouTube channel. Oh, next week we're going to record on Saturday.
We are, yes.
Yes, we're not recording on Wednesday next week because we have a guest from the United States of America that cannot be with us on a Wednesday afternoon.
Cool.
Cool. So if neither of you guys have anything to add, I think we have reached the end of this review of Star Trek Picard Season 1, Episode 6, The Impossible Box.
So, Lainey, how are you finding this series of Picard so far?
Well, I mean, as you know, I'm not a huge follower of Star Trek, but I'm really loving this to the point where I look forward to the next episode. And just, I can't wait to find out the answers. It gets me excited and just like, oh my god. It's just great to have Patrick Stewart back as Jean-Luc. But yeah, no, I love it. It's probably the first in its entirety.
Really? Okay, that's interesting.
Yes, because I only get in and out. I probably watched a lot of Next Generation, but any of the others, really, I just kind of dipped in and out.
Do you think it's linked to the fact that we can watch the episodes as they air for the first time, rather than, you know, having like a 80 something episode or 100 episodes to watch, and then, you know, you say, oh, I can always watch that later, and then you end up not watching. Whether now we have every week we have a meeting with our crew.
Yeah, I think it's good, and it's so. I mean, with social media, I mean, you can get shows that air in the States that we don't have over here yet, or, you know, episodes air, and you get spoilers. And with this, we're not getting spoilers because it's released pretty much the same time as the US. There's only like a few hours. So it's good to be able to watch it and be surprised.
Yeah, I agree. It's great that they're doing this like that. They're releasing it everywhere. Well, there's 24-hour delay, but it's basically during the night for us, so there's very little chance that we get any spoiler. for those, of course, who don't wait 3 days to watch the show.
Yes, obviously.
Well, this is true. This is true.
I think there being a lot of hype around it as well. It certainly helps.
And Nate said he doesn't want spoilers, but he did spoil who is going to be on the show next week. I think we all know now.
James, when it would be a case, I would like all episodes there so I could watch the next one. But I think having the week between, I mean, that's like a normal TV show anyway. You know, you kind of, you build up and you get to watch that week's episode over and over. So you pick up more bits and you get more and more and you develop more theories. And then you get the next episode, you watch the next episode and you see whether those theories still work or whether you're going down another path. But, I don't know. It's one of those. It's like, yeah, I want to know the answers now, but I'm enjoying the weekly dose of Patrick Stewart and friends.
Yeah, and I think we are very fortunate. At least I know I am, to be doing this show because it gives me time to think about the episode, you know, let it sink in, watch it a second time for review purposes and all those things. So maybe, you know, catch some stuff that I would have missed on the first time. And then we talk about it. So I have a feeling that this series, I know this series a lot better than any other series. And the same is true with season 4 of Enterprise, actually. The fact that we were watching them one episode a week and then reviewing them, I feel like it gives me a depth into the knowledge of those series, and I like that a lot. So I'm like you. I would at the end of each episode, I want to see the next one, but I'm also very very glad to be able to talk about those theories and come on Telegram and then say, hey guys, what do you think about that? And then I realize that it's not completely far-fetched and maybe it could be true, and then wait for next week, for the week after, to see if that's true or not. And it's really great. So I think the fact that that it's a series and we have one episode a week, it's really great. The fact also that it's one big story, we already said that, but the fact that it's one big story, it grabs us every week to want to come back, because
yeah.
You know, if it was just a episodic series, you'd go, okay.
I think we discussed this in some length with Ro quite a few weeks back, where we were talking about the difference between having an episode released episodically or having the whole lot coming out in one go, and the benefits of doing it this way, that then you get the anticipation, you get the opportunity to discuss it. You don't get to the stage where, you know, if we had the 10 episodes come out in one go and we were still doing a weekly podcast about it, by the time we get to the 10th episode, everybody's given up. They've forgotten about it because it's not current anymore.
Yeah.
But I think that there is a huge difference between watching an episode of any show casually as opposed to watching it for a particular purpose. And watching these episodes, and again, I'll go with Yannick on this one. No, I didn't say I agreed with you. I said I'll go with you. Looking at Enterprise season 4, I found that I invested myself and engaged myself, no pun intended, with Enterprise season 4 a lot more than I did with the first 3 seasons, purely because there was a purpose for me to watch it.
So I would encourage anyone who wishes to watch a series to start a podcast about it, because it helps.
Yeah, absolutely. Or come a guest on ours.
For a non-fan like myself, I think having this show, having you guys do this show, the Picard episodes, and even about Enterprise, they want to watch it. So I don't think without this show, I don't think I would be watching Picard as much as I do. So I have to thank you guys for...
Our job is done.
Kind of pushing me in. And Wednesday night is my joint favourite night of the week.
Yeah, well, except for next week. Sorry about that.
Oh, I can have a week off. You're all right.
And 2 weeks after that. And 2 weeks after that.
Oy.
Well, it's not really a week off. We're going to be live on YouTube on Saturday. I don't know at what time yet, but it's going to be on Saturday, yeah.
Oh, you'll let us know.
Fair play. So you're enjoying it then, Lainey? That's the important thing.
I am. It's nice. I mean, I have a lot of shows that I watch a week, and Picard on a Friday is usually something I save till... I probably save it till Saturday, actually, because Friday nights kind of taken up with something else. I kind of just kind of curl up in bed, and I'm on my phone, and I've got my tablet at the side, and I put it on, and I love it. For the best part of an hour, I'm not here. It's just... And it flies by. This episode, I watched it, and it was like... It was over almost as if after it began, you know what I mean? But it's like 50-odd minutes long. It went by that fast because I was enjoying myself.
Yeah, I agree. I've never experienced any, how do you call that, length, slowliness in those episodes.
Yeah.
So, Dave, how about we mention those wild theories we had during the week?
Yeah, so we had a comment on our Telegram group from Ro, who we've had three times on the show now.
Yeah.
And he brought to our attention the concept of the Conclave of Eight, which is one of the apparent conspiracy theories that Raffi is entertaining with regard to the attack on Mars, the synth attack on Mars. And Ro brought to our attention that Commodore O, the Romulan word for eight is Oku, suggesting a link between Commodore O and the Conclave of Eight. Now, digging into this a little bit more, apparently Michael Chabon, who is one of the executive producers and also the showrunner for this season of Picard, has also hinted towards the same connection.
Oh.
So that would actually make a lot of sense in Commodore O's involvement. The suggestion that we had before that the Federation is probably complicit in the attack on the facility on Mars. So yeah, it's a really good theory, and I think it probably could stand up really well. So I think that's one of the things we should keep an eye on.
So that would mean that it would really be the conclave of Commodore O and not the conclave of Eight that Raffi would have had a wrong translation?
Potentially, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the the name was, I don't know, security by obscurity, hiding the name in plain sight, where a lot of people may not have realised. Bearing in mind that it's the Romulans that are kind of taking the stick for this at the moment, then nobody would be thinking in Vulcan terms that there is a link between Commodore O's name and the Conclave of Eight, because everybody thinks it's Romulans.
Okay, it's a valid theory, and we'll put that in the bag of theories that we have.
For which I believe you have one to add.
Yes, I have a theory that maybe Commodore Ho is actually Section 31. So working for the Federation, for Starfleet. It's not the Federation, it's Starfleet, posing as a collaborator with the Vulcan, the Romulans on that. And we know that Commodore O went to see Dr. Jurati, so maybe Section 31 has something on Jurati to make her do what she did to Maddox and what she probably will do, because I'm sure she's up to no good. And I was suggesting that maybe Section 31 funded the research that Maddox did on artificial intelligence, which actually I think it could stand.
I think it could. I think the idea of Section 31 sanctioning continuing research and development into synthetic life would fall within their remit of the idea of suspending rules in case of, I can't remember the wording is, dire need or dire consequences or something.
Yeah.
So that would fall under their remit quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also had a suggestion from somewhere that potentially Jurati could be Section 31 as well.
Okay. So that's Nate. We said that earlier in there.
Ah, right, of course.
In our chat room, yeah.
So much information coming in. I can't deal with it all.
Yeah. Lots of theory. So we'll see. We still have, three or four episodes?
Four.
Yeah. So plenty of time to get more questions and some answers.
Yes. And I'm sure that in the next 4 weeks, we will have more and more theories, hopefully more focused ones as well. And maybe even get some of the ones that we've come up with, the predictions we've come up with so far, debunked.
Yeah.
As we go.
Probably, because we're not...
Or answered.
Mm. Or answered.
Yep.
Nice.
Well, I guess it's housekeeping time. Well, thanks to everyone who downloaded our previous episodes. You can help us make the world aware of our existence by hijacking the emergency broadcast system of your country and playing our entire back catalogue of episodes. Or if that's too much work, just by sharing the address of our website on various social media.
Yes, and of course, that's reusable, because as we produce more and more episodes, each time you hijack the emergency broadcast system, it goes for longer. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, we did some very complicated math, apparently, earlier, and we ended up with, 1,400 hours, something like that, of shows if we review every episode.
In 14 and a half years' time, yes.
Yeah, so, yeah, 1,500 hours.
Yes. I don't think the internet's big enough for that, to be honest.
No, I don't know.
And of course, you can find our website over at tlgreyhot.org, where you can find our show notes, our reviews, and you can, of course, leave a comment on every one of our episodes.
And if you are still using this antiquity that is called the email, you can send us one at feedback@tlgreyhot.org. We love getting your feedback. We read everything. And don't forget to mention if you don't want us to read your email, because we might just do that if you don't.
Indeed. And of course, we do have the other email address, which is iagreewithdave@tlgreyhot.org. You can also find us on social media.
As that doesn't get any email.
Shush. You can also find us on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Telegram. Our username on all three of those is TEGH Podcast. If you join our Telegram group, we post the YouTube link to our live broadcasts each week, and it's the only place we post that link. So if you want to have a chance to join us on our live streams when we do our broadcast, well, our recordings even, then you definitely want to be in our Telegram group.
Thanks to Memory Alpha, as always. We have based our review of this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by attribution non-commercial license, so you can't do business with this review.
Indeed. Why would you want to, though? Because they've given it away for free. So, you know, give them a bit of slack. The rest of this show, unless otherwise stated, is released under a Creative Commons by attribution share alike license. This means that you can do pretty much whatever you would like to do with the episode content, as long as you credit us as the original authors. And if you do publish something based on this episode, then you do have to release it under the same license.
And of course, this podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find out more about our shows over at otherside.com. network, where you can find lots of podcasts, lots of hosts, and on lots of different subjects. So visit us, otherside.network.
And we may have a new show joining the network in the near future.
Ooh.
Really?
Yes.
Ooh.
Can't say anything because nothing's confirmed, but this is a possibility.
Well, I'm looking forward to this new show. Good, good, good.
Our next episode will be, well, I'm really looking forward to it, will be a review of Star Trek Picard Episode 7, Nepenthe. And we will have another guest, another return guest, from the other side of the Atlantic pond, joining us for that.
Yes, absolutely. Looking forward to having his opinion because it was very good to have him. He's got lots of good comments on the first time he was there.
It was a long time ago as well.
Yeah, it was the fourth episode, I think. Because we did the first one together. The second one was Michael. The third one was just us. And the fourth one was that mystery guest that nobody knows about unless you go back to episode 4. He actually has a Romulan name. Just saying.
Who does? What, our guest?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Ah. You didn't notice that? The real name of Nalek? Well, you're going to go back to the review. So, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thanks, Lainey, for joining us. Once again, it was a real pleasure to have you.
It was so much fun, as always. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it's good to have you. As with anybody, it's nice to have a second set of opinions. But, yeah, it's really good to have you back on the show again.
Yeah, I like that we have... A broad range of guests from the real, you know, the Trekkies, the hardcore Trekkies, to people who actually just enjoy the show and are not experts in the Trek universe. And I like that because we prove that that Star Trek is no longer a geeky show and everybody can enjoy it, and it's great, and everybody has great opinions, and I like that we can share that with the world.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, Lainey, you are also invited to come back and join us in, I think it's 4 weeks' time.
Yeah. Yeah.
When we review the Voyager episode Threshold.
Right.
Absolutely.
When we're going to try and get absolutely everybody that we've had on the show so far.
Well, that sounds like fun.
And it's going to be utterly hectic, but hopefully it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, what I think for this episode with so many people is that what's going to get recorded is what's going to get published because I don't see any of us editing 13 track recording. That's just not going to happen.
So no, not at all.
What you hear is what you get, I guess, basically.
Yes. And before you close, Yannick, I have now caught up with you. I now know what you're talking about with the Romulan real name of our guest next week. Yes, I'm there now.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys, for joining me. Thank you, Nate, and thank you, Mark, for joining us in the live chat room on YouTube. We will be back next week with a whole bunch more of Star Trek. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.
Bye.
He holds Dash's pendant in his hand as he looks back to... Nope. Let's do that again.
Thank you for at least one blooper, because we've been fairly blooper-free so far.
Hugh emphasizes it.
Number two.
No.
An anguished Narek leaves the room and leaves... Who wrote that?
Explain.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at
ofaside.network.